Hi, I'm Lena.
I'm Amon.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Amon, so what are we talking about today?
So today we're doing something we haven't done in a little while, which is read an actual comic book.
Yes.
yes. So we found this comic book that came out just a few weeks ago, actually, and it's by a French independent publisher called Humanoids, and it's called Makhno, Ukrainian Freedom Fighter. And, you know, y'all can guess why we picked this one. And I'm just going to leave that at that. But yeah, it follows it's a comic book. It's like historical fiction, but it's based on a real person called Nestor Makhno. His original birth.
His actual first full name is Nestor Ivanovich Mikhnienko. And then Makhno became some sort of like nickname. I don't know. Yeah,
I guess so.
Yes,
I guess so. I feel like a lot of revolutionaries around that time would, of any fame or notoriety, eventually ended up with the nickname. Like Turkey's Mustafa Kemal became Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. Atatürk was a nickname,
I guess. I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah, I think he's known mostly as Nestor Makhno.
Yes. So just to give a little bit of background to sort of set the scene here, this revolutionary leader was Ukrainian, and he was born in a little small Ukrainian town called Huliaipol.
I think it's Huliaipol.
Huliaipole. So yeah,
I've been pronouncing it Huliaipol. I think we can go with that.
Okay, Huliaipol. So this is around the same time, you know, when Tsarist Russia fell to the Bolshevik Revolution. And, you know, I feel like anytime these kinds of revolutions happen anywhere in the world, especially in the post-World War I, World War II era, in that time period in the early 20th century, we really only think about the revolutions that won. But there were always these competing ideologies that we don't normally cover. And this story is about a figure who had a competing ideology to the Bolsheviks, who eventually lost.
And by the way, the Bolsheviks were the main, ended up becoming the main communist party, right? For Russia, the USSR.
Yes.
Just to provide some context. Yes.
Yep. This would be the whole Lenin-Stalin gang.
Yeah. The Lenin-Stalin. Wait, are Bolsheviks, are the Bolsheviks also the ones who, what was the name of that family? Anastasia's family.
No. Anastasia's family was the Romanovs.
No, I meant, did the Bolsheviks get rid of the Romanovs? Right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. There we go. So providing more context. So
there was one revolution happening in and around Moscow and others happening in other parts of Russia. And this is a story of one leader in Ukraine who tried to basically establish a whole workers' rights thing and set up a communes throughout Ukraine, where people would just have small communities, each person, very communist in its thinking, where each person would have, you know, only the amount of land that they cultivate
that they needed
themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only what they needed. And everybody would just work together in that way. And
they would pitch in and help each other out, which honestly, it sounds really nice.
Democratic elections for leaders. Yeah. It does sound really nice. But, you know, one thing that really struck me is that it sounds very communist, but it actually doesn't quite flow with Marx's theories around communism, which is what Lenin was really pushing for. And afterwards, even Stalin.
But before that, Leon Trotsky.
And before that, Trotsky. But the thing about Marx was that he really felt and really truly believed that that communist revolutions would arise amongst the proletariat in urban settings. You know, his thinking, as best as I remember from my sociology classes, and I'm sure my old professor Terry is going to tell me how wrong I am in all of this stuff, but he really only accounted for revolutions taking place amongst the proletariat in urban settings. Didn't really account for agrarian societies and cultures. And that was really what Lenin and afterwards Stalin really prescribed to. It's what led that kind of thinking is what led Stalin to destroy a whole bunch of villages in Ukraine and completely destroy the agrarian economy there. I mean, millions of Ukrainians died of famine because of what Stalin did. Mm-hmm. And it was also a big part of this philosophical difference about the origins of how communism can come to be was also a source of conflict between Soviet Russia and the Communist Party in China. The Communist Party in China started off also really gained support amongst the more agrarian folks, you know, people who were living in villages and farming and cultivating land. And Mao's big thing was that, you know what, we're not going to be able to take over the cities from the nationalists. Let's just focus on gathering our support amongst the rural classes. And that led to kind of a conflict, which Nixon exploited to create a divide between Mao's China and Soviet Russia afterwards. So it's interesting, this little philosophical difference led to a lot of conflict in the post-World War I and post-World War II eras between how different groups wanted their ideas of communism to come about. And this story in this comic book, Makhno, Ukrainian Freedom Fighter, this is also, I think, at the underlying root of this conflict.
Yeah. There are so many revolutions that happened in that part of the world, not even like in the past, like several hundred years, but even literally, even if you look from like the past 100 years or what, you know, or if you look at a 50 year time period, 20 year, like there were a lot of revolutions. And I mean, there have been so many revolutions even like 10 years ago.
We were just looking it up and we were like, what? That revolution happened? We didn't even, what?
Yeah. Like,
we missed that one.
There was an Orange Revolution that grabbed a lot of people's attentions back in 2004. There was another one. Was it in 2014? I don't remember. It was called a Revolution of Dignity and something like that. And so, and obviously in 2014, Russia invaded and took Crimea. So, I mean, there is just a lot going on in that region of the world. But it's not like, oh, that's just happening to them, that has no relation to us. And I think it's important and crucial for all of us to be paying attention to what's going on. And reading this comic book, it was really, well, first of all, it was very interesting just learning about this guy. I didn't even know about him. And
Never heard of him.
And I know, Aman, you and I have totally talked about this before, but we've mentioned to each other how we really wish we could have lived in Ukraine as older kids, you know, or as like high schoolers or at least middle schoolers. Well, I guess you got a little bit of that. I don't remember, but yeah, barely sixth grade. It doesn't count. But because I think we would have learned a lot more about Ukrainian history in our classrooms too. Whereas, you know, I was only 7 and 8 years old. I was like, barely scratching the surface of certain things. We were drawing pictures of the Ukrainian flag. That's where I was at in my schooling when it came to like Ukraine's history. So I think it would have been really fascinating to have been living there when we were older rather than how old we actually were.
Absolutely. I think we have a strong emotional attachment to Ukraine and especially to Kyiv because we were there in these very formative years, but we didn't have like the intellectual capacity to understand more than just the emotional attachment at the time.
And, you know, I'm realizing it's sad, but I just, there's too much about Ukraine I don't know and Ukrainian history. And I feel like I owe it to the country and people that to like really learn about it. So anyway, point of this specific statement is that for everyone who's listening, do not consider us to be experts on anything we're talking about, but we hope that this episode encourages you to pick up a book or even this comic book in particular and read about Ukrainian history. So anyway, a little spiel right there. But as I was reading this comic, it was fascinating to basically get this, like you said, this romanticized version of it is historical fiction in some sense, but it's based off of a real guy. And it was interesting to read about all these revolts, uprisings, labor movements, how these different ideologies are competing with each other. And it's not like this sort of stuff doesn't touch the US, for example. I mean, Amazon just, you know, they're forming their first union, right? And
yeah,
which is a huge deal because, I mean, Amazon was like, okay, fine, we'll allow you to vote on it. But then they had a lot of their own sort of marketing / propaganda encouraging people to not vote for a union, but like one just right. It formed. So, you know, like these things, these ideologies are still impacting people today in different ways. They're impacting our part of the world. They're clearly impacting Russia, Ukraine, that region of the world. So, yeah.
I mean, more than the ideology, it's about the power struggle between mm-hmm. the working class and the, I'm going to call it the capital class, those who own the capital, which right. pays the workers, you know, that mm-hmm. struggle, it's still an ongoing fight everywhere in the world, you know?
Yeah.
And how that struggle, that this competing struggle is resolved, I think that's where a lot of these fights come in. You know, you look at Lenin's in the Bolsheviks revolution, you look at Makhno, you look at what happened in China, and their ends, at least on paper, were the same. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the how that led to the conflict, but the ends are true even here in the westernized world. You know, I mean, what you were talking about Amazon, I remember a few years ago, is the same issue at Tesla's factories where there were no unions and any attempt to form a union was kind of marketed out of existence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it may not be as bloody as it used to be.
Yeah.
Or it may be in other parts of the world, but it's still the same struggle. I mean, it's still a very relevant thing. I think it serves all of us to know how these things have been addressed in the past so we don't make the same mistakes in the future.
Yeah. I mean, they're information wars now. That's yeah. what's happening, at least, especially in the US, you know, but it's really interesting. Ugh, I've lost my train of thought. I was going to say something else, but I forget.
So, Grab Lena, mm-hmm. going back to, we covered a lot of the background and like some of our thinking about this. What did you think of the comic itself?
It was more like a straightforward type of style. There wasn't anything experimental, I think, going on in terms of the illustration, which is fine. Yeah. I feel like this was a history textbook in comic book form, but with some, you know, idealized parts to it. Because it's obviously yeah. trying to tell a story about this freedom fighter, revolutionary mm-hmm. dude. So, you know, you got to throw in some pizzazz here and there. But I was also very struck by how they definitely didn't shy away from Makhno's flaws. And yes. which there were definitely many. Like, he had a women problem, meaning that yep. he really liked sleeping with a lot of them and did not really, I think, see them too much as equal. I mean, he did and he didn't. I don't know. He eventually had a bad drinking problem. He eventually was very violent too. You know, it was sort of
very
like
violent.
It was my way or the highway kind of situations. Yeah. But also he's trying to help the peasants of the rural class and all that. So it's very conflicting. He was a conflicted person from based yes. off of this comic solely. That's what I got mm-hmm. from it.
Yeah. I mean, the romanticized version in this comic, this guy, Makhno, was angry. That's one yeah. big thread that really cut through from the very beginning of his story as a child all the way to the end, is that this is a very angry guy. Yeah. And a lot of his anger is just directed at the unfairness in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what he was necessarily like as a person in real life, but we're just talking about this graphic novel here. He's a very angry person, and I like how they carried that thread all the way from the beginning of his life as a kid, mm-hmm. all the way to the end when he dies. He's just very, he's idealistic, but very, very angry. Yeah. And also just very brutal from the get-go. And I like how in the telling of this story, that theme about his anger at the world basically has been there as a kid, cuts through all the way to the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even when his revolution died, you could still sense in the writing the anger that he has in him, mm-hmm. and this same desire to continue to, even when he's, you know, working as a cabbie and trying to make ends meet by being a shoe cobbler at night, you know, fixing shoes. You could still tell he had this anger mm-hmm. in him,
yeah,
at the world.
Yeah.
Never really resolved it, but I like that. And I agree with you. The artwork was good, but yeah, like you said, nothing really experimental going on here. It kind of like, it very much felt like this could be the storyboard of a movie.
Yeah, it could be like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, there are some comics out there where they really go all out in terms of the artwork and the style of artwork to mm-hmm. feed into the story. This comic, I felt like the artwork didn't really bother to do that. It was just looking to tell the story. It wasn't looking to add to the story. Mm-hmm. With the artistic style, which is fine. Like you said, it's fine.
Yeah. I think they were trying to be true to this real life person and also the real life people that this comic book shows, you know? So it was more like just wanting to show real faces in a realistic way.
Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, oh man, some of the scenes in this novel though, really, really struck me because it didn't try to shy away from anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had this one scene where the white Cossacks, I think, that Makhno and his gang of revolutionaries are fighting, basically caught this group of fighters from Makhno's group, and rather than killing them, decided to cut their feet off.
Yeah. Ugh, God, and that was...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was brutal. And I feel like it captures some of the historical accuracy of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it romanticized the person. It did not romanticize the era.
No, very true. Yeah. Some things I was very shocked to be reading in a comic book and seeing illustrated. I was like, God, that's pretty brutal. That's ugh. Yeah. But you know, another thing that this comic was, like, things I was thinking while reading this comic was how, like you were talking about, this anger that Makhno has, mm-hmm. obviously, you know, he dealt with a lot of trauma as a child. One of his brothers died when he was a child, and I think died of like a disease or something, and only because they probably couldn't afford medicine. And then his mom had to basically give him up and have him be adopted by this very rich lady with an estate and who was very mean and strict and would whip you if you did bad things. And so, you know, he had a traumatic experience. He was separated from his mother, from his family, had a lot of anger issues, but then also, you know, mm-hmm. he started seeing just rich people in general as like a disease. Right. And I think a lot about how that sort of anger exists everywhere, even now. Like anytime I'm going on social media or anything, I mean, think about how, you know, whenever they make those lists of like, so-and-so are the top 5 richest people in the world. And then you kind of just feel disgusted because they're like multi-billion, trillionaire, whatever, you know? And I remember one time me and a couple of friends were like we looked up some CEO's salary and we were like, I would have to work like 7 years to make the same amount of money they make in half a day. You know, like we literally sat down and calculated that and we're like, this is disgusting. And
right.
Or like, you know, you need to work like 5 year or, you know, like a year to make what they make in an hour. And it's like,
I know
it's just, and it grosses you out. Like part of it is like, it's so ludicrous. It's almost kind of funny, but it's also mm-hmm. just like, it's, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's pretty disgusting how unequal the world is. And then with this pandemic, I mean, never in a million years would I have predicted that the rich people would only get richer during a yes. global pandemic. And yes. that was honestly, it was heartbreaking and horrifying to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I can't remember where I read this. I think it was in some book, where like a satire book or something. And I cannot remember for the life of me, but this quote stuck with me where it was like, imagine that for every $5 you made, somebody somewhere in the world died.
Yeah.
That's a pretty accurate representation of the economy.
Like the current economy?
The current economy, yeah. Oh, and, you know, I feel like, you know, there was a time, I think, that when you see a list of richest people in the world, you see those names and you're like, wow, so-and-so, yeah, came up with this amazing, innovative idea,
yeah. right?
Or did something that was good, you know? Mm-hmm. And so they deserve to be this rich. But looking at the Forbes list of top 10 richest people in the world now, you look at that list of names and you're like, is the CEO of this company really worth 1,000 times more than the person in the accounting department? You know, is their yeah. role really that much more magnitudes more important?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's the real question, I think, that makes a lot of people really sick, where it's like, yeah. You run a company, but are you really that much smarter, that much more valuable than anybody else at right. this company, or who helps to operate the business that you're running? You know, right. is that really truly the case? I mean, and there are very few exceptions to that, I think. You know, I mean, even for example, Jeff Bezos, all right? Mm-hmm. He yep. really did start Amazon with packaging up books himself in his garage and shipping them to whoever ordered yeah. books on Amazon. All right.
Yeah.
He really did start that way. Mm-hmm. And he really did implement an amazing, amazing company and retail system with like crazy supply chains and that supply chain management, you know, mm-hmm. like he did do something to be, at one point, at least, the richest man in the world, you know? Mm-hmm. So I can see him I can look at him and be like, yeah, he earned that. But is he really worth that much more right. than the person who's working at the warehouse at Amazon?
Right.
You know, I mean, that even for somebody who I think is quite an amazing businessman and really did pull himself up from his bootstraps, you know? Even I have a lot of respect for what he's accomplished, but is he really worth that much more than
yeah? That's
anybody
thing,
else
right?
at his company.
I mean, so that's the thing about capitalism in general, is that obviously you do want a system where if you work hard, you want to get what you're working hard for, right? And what yes. you're worth and all that, and like that is, you know, in theory and idealistically what we're trying to go for with capitalism, where anyone right. based solely off merit, hard work, etc., can make it. But
yes,
we just there are countless examples of how we are just hitting a wall, and it's really bringing up a lot of moral questions of like, well, mm-hmm. okay, and taking Jeff Bezos again as an example, like, does this dude really need that many billions of dollars? Like, I mean, it's interesting because then if you look at his ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott, is her name, I think.
Yeah.
She also, you know, like as a result of the divorce, got shit tons of money. And so she...
Oodles and oodles. I believe the technical oodles. Number is oodles and oodles.
Right. And she has given away so much of it and is continuing to give so much of it. She's got like a whole, I don't even know, like a panel of financial advisors, right? Who she's like working closely with to figure out good and smart investments and good and smart ways to actually charitably give away a huge, huge chunks of money. And she's very interesting to me because she's showing a totally different side of what capitalism could be, because she's kind of like, I don't need this much money, you know, like no one does to live a very comfortable, happy life and secure life. I do not need this many billions of dollars. So, so like, that's what's very interesting to me. And I feel like that should be explored more. And I wish more rich billionaire people could explore that too, because if you look at the communism side of it, in theory, it sounds very nice. The idea of communes that Nestor Makhno was starting, it looked really lovely in the comic book. I was like, that's
it did. Nice.
Yeah. I'm like, everyone's helping each other. You're pitching in, you're working the land together, all this stuff. But the thing is, in reality, when you look back on the communism of the Soviet Union and what all these different countries had to, you know, deal with is that a lot of people were just starving.
Yes.
And sure, everyone was equal and on the same level, but they were like on the most bottom level together and starving. And,
there was still mass inequality.
Yeah, there was mass inequality too, but it's like, and I'm talking about like the masses, you know, starving, So, I mean, so much of this comic book brings up a lot of debates and discussions that people are currently having all over the world.
Yeah. Before we switch back to talking about the graphic novel here, one thing that you were talking about is exploring the idea of these multi-billionaires giving back. I think it was Plato who said that, in Plato's Republic, where Plato said that the best form of government is a benevolent dictatorship. The problem with that is that there's no way to guarantee the benevolency of said dictator.
Right.
All right. It's the same thing. There's a similar thing happening here, I think, with capitalism, and really touches on what you said, is that the ultra rich giving back, yes, that would be ideal, right? Yeah. But you're still depending on somebody's goodwill and benevolency to do that, which is not a good system. It's not good systemically,
right?
You know, because there's no way to guarantee that will happen. And one of the things that
there's no checks and balances with that.
One of the things that with the whole idea of laissez-faire economics, implementation of free market capitalism and whatnot, you know, people always look to Adam Smith and his writings in The Wealth of Nations. And the thing that I feel like always gets ignored is that Adam Smith did talk about how you need systems and regulations to make sure that this free hand of the economy doesn't run amok, creating mass inequality. A lot of people, especially in the US, I'm talking about now, a lot of people, especially on the right, like to paint Elizabeth Warren as somebody who hates capitalism and wants to implement some kind of socialism and whatnot. But the fact of the matter is, or I don't know about the fact of it, in my view, I actually see Senator Elizabeth Warren as somebody who loves capitalism and wants it to work.
Yeah.
Her brainchild of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, you know, is really, truly deeply rooted, I think, in making sure that capitalism doesn't lead to extreme inequality. And anybody who is a student of history knows that every single time a society has been completely upended because of a grassroots revolution of some kind, whether it's the Bolshevik Revolution or what are other things that have happened? I'm totally blanking. That all of these things
too many revolutions
can be traced to a moment in time where inequality is at its most extreme. Mm-hmm. I know I've mentioned this right here on Grounded Geeks before, but democracy in Athens came about because of a revolution where the peasant classes revolted and just started killing rich people.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. And then this guy, whose name I can never remember, was like, probably not good if we just kill people left and right. He's the one who then came up with this idea that everybody have a say in how the city is run, mm-hmm. and came up with a system of voting where every person gathers together, debates a particular topic or issue, and then people use white stones or black stones to vote yay or nay.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, inequality is an important problem because long term, it leads to complete and utter upheaval.
Yeah.
Of society. Yeah.
Right. And that's our podcast.
And that's, yeah. But going back to the subject of this episode, I wanted to bring up something that really, really jumped out at me about the story of Makno, which I think is really relevant to what's happening in this war in Ukraine, this invasion by Russia of Ukraine. Is this comic really, truly, I think, highlighted an idea of a Ukrainian cultural identity that is separate and independent of any other culture and identity that exists. There's a lot of disinformation, really started by Vladimir Putin, and a lot of disinformation within Russia about, basically, he's like, oh, Ukraine is just like, they're just Russians, basically, you know? And they're not just Russians. Ukraine is not some kind of offshoot of Russian culture. You know, there is an independent identity. And right at the beginning of this comic, I love this scene where Makhno is with his brother and his mom, and they're in this shanty little cold house without any warmth. And his mom is telling her son the story about these crescent earrings that Cossack leaders would wear when they had been elected as leaders by their tribes, you know? And I think that I really liked how this comic, how the writers and the artists really made clear that, yes, it was this revolution that, you know, Nestor Makhno was leading was not just rooted in equality for the working classes and for all people, really, but it was also a revolution that was rooted in Ukraine and Ukrainians being able to live their lives as Ukrainians. And there was a huge thread also in all of this fighting where he was trying to push off invaders, whether it was the Bolsheviks or the White Cossacks, which just to clarify, I feel like I keep saying Cossacks, but the term Cossack actually historically has been applied to all of these groups that have existed throughout southern Russia that were basically independent tribes. I'm using the word tribe, not in its technical term, but as more descriptive, lowercase t. Tribes and groups that were independent of Tsarist Russian rule and just kind of existed throughout all of southern Russia into Ukraine. So this Cossack identity that I'm talking about is specifically Ukrainian Cossacks. So just wanted to clarify that small point in history.
Yep. Good footnote.
Just that little footnote there. But yeah, I liked that thread. And I feel like it's really, really relevant to today. Because when we think of Ukraine, you know, a lot of times we have a tendency to clump together cultures, you know, people who live, for example, just to bring it back home a little, people who live outside of the United States, think of the United States as this monolithic country and culture. Whereas, but, you know, in fact, if you're in New York and you come down to Georgia, you're going to experience a very, very different culture. Where it's almost like, how are these two groups even the same country, let alone considered, you know, the same people. Huge, massive cultural differences that exist throughout the United States, going from north to south, east to west. Mm-hmm. You know, and in that same way, I think it's important for us to remember when we're sitting here in the US or even in, you know, Western Europe or in other parts of the world that are not Eastern Europe, to remember that each of these countries, and especially and for special relevancy today, Ukraine is a country that has its own culture, its own people, and its own history that is separate and is baked into the identity of the Ukrainian people.
Yeah. I think if this graphic novel comic book was being published next year, let's say, I mean, mm-hmm. I think that would have been an even stronger thread in this story. Obviously, this guy, this author, he wrote this, even though it was published literally a few weeks ago. Obviously, mm-hmm. he wrote this whole story before any of what's been happening the last couple of months started. So, yeah, you know, I was just reading an article yesterday about how Vladimir Putin has been waging also his own information war within Russia. And basically, his government is telling everyone, if you see or hear of anyone who is not supporting our very special military operation, then you need to report them and they will be fined. And there are several instances of, for example, like eighth grade students who are reporting their teachers just for saying Ukraine is a separate country. Like it's and then it's ridiculous. And then like the police show up at these teachers' homes and they're being fined right now. But obviously mm-hmm. when protests were happening, they arrested a bunch of people. And I think most of them were also fined, but some of them got thrown in prison. And it's just, it's ridiculous. It's shocking that this, it's just been going on for so many years. I mean, mm-hmm. at least the last 100 years, you know, where Russians are trying to insist that Ukrainians are just, you know, part of Russia and they're just like an offshoot of Russia. And they're not, like you were saying, they have their own history, their own culture, and their own country that is currently being invaded by Russia.
Yeah. I think one thing to going a little bit into geopolitics here, one thing to remember is that at one point in time, at least, Ukraine was considered the breadbasket of Europe. It supplied the vast majority of wheat for all of Europe. The land is just so fertile. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, in 1 year, they will have multiple growing seasons. And I mean, it's just amazing the resources that exist there. Yeah. And apparently, I heard this recently, when the Bolshevik Revolution happened, Lenin basically said that if our revolution is to have any hope, we need the wheat and coal of Ukraine.
Yeah.
And at that time, you know, oil was not that big of a thing. Coal mm-hmm. was the main source of energy. So Ukraine has been this sort of land under contention between the Romanov Tsarist Russia, the Austro-Hungarians, and then afterwards the Soviet Union and Bolsheviks and everything. Everybody's been wanting a piece of this land because of the resources that exist there. And I think that what has happened is that because of this fight, a lot of what makes Ukraine Ukraine has kind of been lost to history, or at least to the common knowledge. I mean, I mean that in the most unfortunate terms. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, with the current crisis, I think it's important for any of us who's paying attention to the news these days to teach ourselves and to learn more about Ukraine and the Ukrainian people and mm-hmm. their history. You know, yeah. I mean, that's great. I stand with Ukraine. Okay. let's all pick up a book and learn what that means.
Yeah.
Kind of where I'm going with that little tirade.
Yep. I love that. All about that. And I feel like that's kind of a great way to end this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we spent this whole time talking about all sorts of random things in this graphic novel.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Without ever mentioning the author's name.
Oh, so right.
This episode is about the graphic novel Makhno, Ukrainian Freedom Fighter, published by Humanoids, which is a French comic book publisher. written by Philippe Thoreau and drawn by Roberto Zaghi.
Yes. We will include all sorts of links and additional info in our show notes.
Yeah. Oh, so. We're so bad at reviewing comics. You know, we went through an entire episode without mentioning the author's name once. Hey,
I'll include it in the description of the episode. Okay. We'll be fine. It's fine. Well, okay. On that note, thank you once again for listening to Grounded Geeks and Ramadan Mubarak. We'll talk more about that later this month.
And we'll catch you next time.